Wake up, sunshine. Open up your sleepy eyes for me.
Al Kooper, who was a huge fan of Chicago's, came in to Studio B at CBS in New York and sat down and listened to the first of side one of Chicago 2. And he said, this is exactly, precisely what I wanted to do. The perfect marriage of brass and rock. 25, 4, 6, 2, 4. Hi, I'm Robert Lamb with Chicago, and you're in the studio with Chicago 2.
In a way, this edition of In the Studio resembles an episode of Sesame Street because it's brought to you by the number 2. For instance, the Windy City of Chicago has another nickname, the Second City. The second album released by the band Chicago was, like their 1969 debut as Chicago Transit Authority, a two-disc set, which had sold a record-setting 2 million copies of their debut. Chicago would later go on to become the second biggest-selling American group of all time, behind the Beach Boys. But unlike the Wilson Brothers and a cousin, the bond that linked the original members of Chicago was not familial, but musical. Writing on AllMusic.com, Lindsay Planer notes, and I quote, Chicago 2 underscores the solid foundation of complex jazz changes with heavy electric rock that the band so brazenly forged on their first set. The Chicago Septet also continued its ability to blend seemingly divergent musical styles into some of the best and most effective pop music of the era, end quote. February 1970, less than a year since the CTA debut release, the band, now known simply as Chicago, prepared their follow-up with singer, songwriter, keyboard player Robert Lamb recalling a cautionary tale.
There's a picture of all of us. We had just come back from our first very positive and sort of triumphant tour of Europe, where we were very, very warmly received and got a lot of raves. So this was like, as you say, January 1970. We're standing, there's a picture of us standing in the warm sunshine outside of the management office on Sunset Boulevard here, outside of Jimmy Guercio's little office, corporate headquarter. I remember sitting in the office afterward with Larry Fitzgerald, who was Chicago's manager for many years underneath Jim Guercio, and we're talking about recording the next album, and he's saying, you know, if you think that, you know, you're being on the road and spending so much time away and playing was a pressure situation, wait until you try to record your next album, you know, which is what you guys are going to have to think about doing. You know, everybody's going to expect it to be as good as the first one. You're going to expect it to be as successful as the first one. And he says, it's really, really a tough situation, and you guys are going to find out what you're made of. So when he said those words, they kind of like blew past my ears, and I think I got a little bit of it. And it really wasn't till somewhere around the fifth album that it sunk in that this is a lot of pressure, you know, or you you can use that pressure in a positive manner, or you can let it get to you. I think we put it to good use. I think we put the pressure to good use now that I look back.
Waiting for the break of day.
Chicago's first top five hit, 25 or 6 to 4, featured guitarist-vocalist Terry Kath, bass player-vocalist Peter Cetera, drummer Danny Serafine, trombonist Jimmy Pankow, trumpet player Lee Lochnang, sax and woodwinds Walter Perizzater, and keyboard vocalist Robert Lamb, who wrote 25 or 6 to 4.
I was living in a house up above the Whiskey on Sunset, and I was sitting in a room at night composing 25 or 6 to 4. By this time, we weren't living together in a house near the Hollywood Freeway. You know, we were living in little apartments and stuff around town. So basically what we did was we hired, you know, small studio spaces, small rehearsal spaces, and got together and began, you know, running down the songs that would end up being Chicago 2.
Yet several of the songs on Chicago 2 tackled the events of that dynamic, volatile period going from the 60s into the 70s. Robert Lamb recalls the song Poem for the People from Chicago.
I know I wrote the lyrics while we were still in Chicago, you know, like the year before we left to go to California, you know, in my own weeny way I was trying to, like, you know, express concern for what was going on around me. writing a song, when I wrote songs back then, I always created sections, at least created, you know, rhythm and harmony sections in which the horns could either solo or play ensemble sections together. Sometimes I would sketch an idea for the horns to play, or I would just say to Jimmy, here's your section, go to the kitchen table now, write something great. And he usually did.
From Chicago, too, that's called Poem for the People, written by Robert Lamb. Just as that song reflected that the band Chicago could be influenced by the day's headlines, the song Movin' In on Chicago, too, proved that they could be inspired by their musical contemporaries as well. Again, Robert Lamb.
Jimmy Pankow wrote that under the influence and auspices of listening to a lot of the band album, The Big Pink. That album really had a lot of influence on all of us. I mean, you know, whether or not we actually copped anything or were able to, you know, we would have copped more had we had the ability. But you know, we just loved that album and that band, and always did from there on.
See that this is all.
With the husky voice of guitarist Terry Kath and the blue-eyed soul of bass player Peter Cetera providing call and response, that's the Jimmy Pankow song, Movin' In, from Chicago 2. Up next, the leader of their lone rival calls Chicago 2 the perfect marriage of brass and rock. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and you can find a whole lot more at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Robert Lamb for the anniversary of Chicago 2.
Hi, I'm Robert Lamb with Chicago, and you're in the studio with Chicago 2 with Redbeard.
One of the timeless songs to capture the essence of a sunny morning appeared on Chicago's sophomore album, entitled Wake Up Sunshine. It was composed by keyboard player, vocalist Robert Lamb.
We actually used to play the song when we were playing clubs in Chicago. So that, you know, we were playing this song in Peoria and Milwaukee and Chicago, you know, in clubs in 1967. We never even thought to record it on the CTA album. I mean, you know, because we were writing other stuff, so we wanted to record that stuff. And I don't even know why we recorded it on the second album, other than we might have found a tape or something. You know, we had a friend who used to kind of follow us around with a really barbaric tape recorder and, you know, try to record us in a crowded, noisy club, you know, with cash registers ringing and, you know, people brawling. And I think we may have heard us a performance of that song and inspired us to record. I love that song.
Make no mistake, that abrupt end is the way they intended it on Wake Up Sunshine from Chicago 2. With Chicago's horn section and big band arrangements, they were inevitably compared to the groundbreaking ensemble Blood, Sweat, and Tears, founded by former Dylan sideman Al Kooper. Robert Lamb of Chicago remembers a cathartic moment in their good-natured rivalry.
Al Kooper, who was a huge fan of Chicago's, came in to Studio B at CBS in New York and sat down and listened to the first of side one of Chicago 2. And he said, "This is exactly right. This is what I want to do." And then he left Blood, Sweat, and Tears. He said, this is exactly right. This is exactly, precisely what I wanted to do. And we're not doing it, so I'm leaving the band. You know, I'm sure there were other factors, when he did decide to leave Blood Sweat. But, you know, he said, this is the perfect marriage of brass and rock.
Oh, my.
Chicago 2 sounded no more like a sophomore slump than the Chicago Transit Authority album that preceded it sounded like a debut. No doubt that this musical moxie came from an abundance of talent. Chicago was an all-star team of 4 songwriters and 3 terrific lead singers, any one of which could have led a successful band. Guitarist Terry Kath had the husky baritone, Peter Cetera, the sweet blue-eyed soul tenor, and Robert Lamb had that smooth voice in the middle.
You know, it's sort of like, you know, water seeking its own level or something, you know, something. A lot of time, I mean, for most of the time that we were writing songs, we never thought about, like, what key is going to be great, going to be right for the whoever's going to sing it. You know, we would basically write the song and you know, see how far each one of us could go. So part of the idea about sharing lead vocals was necessity.
Up next, an impressive suite of songs containing 2 of Chicago's biggest hits. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and you can find a whole lot more from Chicago at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Robert Lamb for the anniversary of Chicago 2.
Hi, I'm Robert Lamb with Chicago, and you're in the studio with Chicago 2 with Redbeard.
Thanks, Robert. Encouraged by Chicago's mentor, manager-producer Jim Guercio, trombone player Jimmy Pankow wrote a whole suite of songs that he called Ballet for the Girl in Buckhannon. Singer-keyboard player Robert Lamb explains.
Jimmy Pankow was working on a multi-movement piece, parts of which became Make Me Smile and Color My World and a lot of other things that you hear on TV now behind sporting events and things like that. It really took him the better part of 1970 to write that. He was writing it all the time. A suite is usually has more movements than a symphony, has shorter movements than a symphony, but not necessarily. And a suite can have any number of movements, and I think this has got 6 or 7 movements. It's really a tribute to his writing and his perseverance because he set out to write something with movements. Jimmy Guercio really always loved the idea of doing major pieces of music, because his contention was that the rock bands of today are really just like Bach and Beethoven were in their day. I mean, they're sort of the present day musicians, and we just happen to be using the language of rock rather than the language of, you know, chamber music or what was the contemporary music of their days. So he liked to tie that little theory together by saying, well, rock musicians, if they wanted to, definitely could write in suite form. Certainly, if you listen to at least the first 7 Chicago albums, there's a lot of that idea cropping up where, you know, we don't go so far as to call them suites or symphonies or anything, but there's a lot of movement going on within a song, a lot of sections, a lot of tempo changes, that kind of stuff. There can be a lot of tempo changes and there can be a lot of key changes, but it had really all better be in context. You know, you just can't go from A to Z. There's got to be stuff in between. So the trick, the device is what we call the transition. You know, so he really did what we were all doing. We were learning how to do stuff as we were doing it, and he learned how to write transitions when he wrote the Ballet for a Girl in Buckhannon. Yeah, Buckhannon is a college town in West Virginia, I think. The girl was, I guess, his high school or his college sweetheart. So he wrote the suite and said goodbye.
it to share and dreams of our moments together. Color my world with hope of loving you.
Color My World movement, I don't even know if there's guitar on that. I think it's just piano and there might be a little organ, flute, bass, and vocal. People are always calling Jimmy and saying, why don't you write another verse and then maybe write a bridge and just do another arrangement. And I think that if Jimmy had wrote that song this year or last year, that it indeed would have another verse or two and probably a bridge and probably a brass arrangement. But back then, in the context of what we were trying to do, it's a perfect arrangement.
What an ambitious piece on Chicago 2, containing the timeless classics Make Me Smile plus Color My World, sung by the late Terry Kath. You heard how Make Me Smile is actually separated by five other musical segments, bookending the suite. Robert Lamb recalls the reaction of Chicago drummer Danny Seraphine to the record label's attempt to extract a hit.
Well, Danny always tells a story that he was driving somewhere in his little VW Bug with 90,000 miles on it, and he heard the single come on the radio, the edit, the 10 minutes chopped out of the middle of it, and he nearly drove off the road. The glove dashed in the face of Chicago by the record company saying, you guys are going to have hit singles no matter what we have to do to get them from you, and this is, and And here's single number one, Slap, Slap, Slap.
But Chicago band members were also swayed in a positive way by their mentor, pop music veteran James William Jimmy Guercio, who produced their music, managed their affairs, too. It was Guercio who recognized the opportunity that the dawn of the 70s presented, a fact not lost on Robert Lamb.
To a large degree, Jimmy Guercio was and is a fascinating guy and very perceptive, a student of history and a student of people. And he and I together would talk about how can we, who are being affected by this, we're not just like sort of watching it on TV and reading about it in papers. We're sort of like being emotionally affected by this stuff like everybody else in the country, and how can we find expression for that? I sort of made almost an unconscious decision early on not to write the pedestrian love songs, but to write either my opinion or, Robert Lamb's little musical newspaper. And I have frustration now, and I had frustration then about what was going on, and B, with my feeling of being completely inarticulate about it.
Every day just gets a little shorter, don't you think? What I mean, people got to come together, not just out of fear. Where do we go? Where do we go? Where do we go from here? Try to find a better place, but soon it's all the same. What it seemed. The more I look around, I find the more I have to fear. Ooh, where do we go? Where do we go? Where do we go from here? I know it's hard for you to change your way of life. I know it's hard for you to do. The world is full of people dying to be free. So if you don't, my friend, there's no life for you. No world for me. Let's all get together soon, before it is too late. Forget about the past and let your feelings fade away. If you do, I'm sure you'll see the end is not yet near. Ooh, where do we go? Where do we go?
His first songwriting for the band Chicago, that's bass player Peter Cetera, singing his Where Do We Go From Here on the anniversary of Chicago 2. With over 120 million albums and singles sold to date, the answer to that question would appear to be self-evident. I'll be back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guest Robert Lamb. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions, copyright 2015, all rights reserved. Transcription, Jane Carpenter Brune. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, on Twitter, at Redbeard Rocks, and visit inthestudio.net.